Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. I thought with the campaigns going full force, at least for nominees for each of the two major parties in our country, as well as just generally a lot of other stuff going on in the world that deals with political issues, and I think in particular, although I realize some of our listeners are not in the U.S., there's a lot of interest in our elections, that I will focus more on the U.S. than, say, other countries. But what I'm going to be talking about today is going to deal with metaphysical and spiritual principles as they apply to political systems. And in particular, like I said, I think I will try to explain it more in terms of the U.S., but this is certainly applicable to any part of the world where at least politics have some freedom to be expressed. For those unfortunate people who might be listening to me in countries where they have no political freedom, they can just hope, maybe, to be able to use some of the information from today's show at some future time in their own circumstances. Let me first explain that, to begin with, since we're going to start more or less focused on the U.S., the U.S. was formed by people who were very familiar with what I tend to teach about, and that's ageless wisdom. That may surprise some of our listeners, but maybe not. The people that I'm talking about, like Thomas Jefferson, etc., are people who had a great understanding, amazingly, of some of the semi-mystical elements of ageless wisdom in their day, because this is a couple hundred years ago now. And back in those times, unlike today, ageless wisdom was mostly in a, at least partially, if not fully, mystified circumstance, and was a kind of part of these various, we'll call them schools, or some people call them clubs, or leagues of various people, etc., that studied and also applied principles of ageless wisdom in their daily lives and in their teaching to others. This was so prevalent, but yet so unusually hidden, that even today, most people do not know that these great minds of our past, the people who were the progenitors of our national thinking, the writers of the Declaration of Independence, probably one of the greatest documents ever written, by the way, and the Constitution of the United States, which was not as great a document as the Declaration of Independence because it was more compromised. And in addition, Articles of Confederation before that and after that, the execution and carrying out of the development of the United States. All of this was done by people who were studying and were members of organizations that promoted ageless wisdom teachings. Wow. Including the Freemasons, for those of you who are familiar with that particular group of people from back then. Not the Masonic orders of today, necessarily, although there's remnants of the past in them, but I'm talking about as it was from about 1720 on. And even before that, then there was the Scottish Freemason order in Europe, that dates back to the early 1600s, and then you've got all kinds of other groups, including the Knights Templar, etc., that had various elements of ageless wisdom incorporated within some of their thought. I know the Knights Templar were actually people who worked in the Catholic tradition and church. That doesn't mean that they didn't have ideas that supported or thought through principles of ageless wisdom. Ageless wisdom is not a religion. It is a way of understanding how the universe works under a creator or God. Not surprising. If you read the Declaration of Independence, it is filled with the word God or Creator, usually Creator, by the way, throughout its substance, and it is based upon inalienable rights that are endowed to us from our Creator and not from any government or from any other source. That's a very big, big, huge concept that is straight out of Hegel's wisdom. I mean, that is like the very beginning of thought in Hegel's wisdom. So it's a big, big issue. And how did this all come about to affect then where we are today in our policies and political units is very interesting, because the United States has kind of, as a whole unit, a group of the United States people, have like a personality that is generalized that has to do with the ray structure, which is called the sixth ray. And this ray, as it moves through the general context of how people express themselves in this country, is a personality type. So we have a sort of type. Every country has a kind of a personality type and a kind of a soul type, if you follow these principles I'm talking about. And I don't want to confuse you. I know this is a little complicated, because we're talking, anytime we're talking about rays, it always gets people like, oh, he's talking about that very strange subject. But this really has to do with what center of the seven chakras in our bodies, when we function mostly personally, which, by the way, is relatively selfish, as a country, what center governs us? And it's mostly our astral center that is focused in the solar plexus region of each of our bodies, but responds mostly to astral issues, so more so than any other aspects. So it's really like, even if our physical body, which is different than our astral body, if it's a solar plexus center, it tends to respond more to astral energies than anything else. And it means that if we're emotional, we tend to be relatively selfish, because it's a personal thing. And if we're not emotional, we can convert it more to a love, which is very important. But it's usually a love that is very focused and directed towards one source, because that's the way the solar plexus center tends to work. It's a little complicated, but I wanted to bring that in there because it has to do a lot with some other elements about what I'm going to be talking about tonight. Okay, in the soul business, you know, when we function more as a soul, we actually don't function out of the same center. We function out of our heart center, which is a second ray center. And that has to do more with teaching and being a teacher of the whole planet, in a sense, if we're a leading country, which we are. And when we do the most, we'll say, altruistic and truly focused out type of functioning as a people, as a country, we do so then really trying to educate others and help them to understand themselves, the world, and their Creator. Very important stuff. So we tend to do this. These are the ways that this particular country works. If you are in a different country and listening to me, that's okay. Your country also has a personality function, and it also has a soul function. It probably isn't the same as the country I'm using as an example, which is the U.S. But nonetheless, you can derive a great deal of understanding from listening to what I'm explaining about. All right, so we have these two sides. Well, it's sort of like it's not a Jekyll and Hyde thing, but it's sort of like more selfish and less selfish side to ourselves. And as we develop as a country, we're more likely to become more like the soul side and less like the personality side. But we're still pretty stuck on the personality side more often than the soul side, unfortunately. Although we have been moving, I mean, maybe with great struggle, more towards being truly unconditionally giving in our way of thinking about the world. Gradually. It's still difficult. All right, so what about the business then of politics? What is that? And why do we tend to have mostly two major parties? Now, I know there's a lot of other parties, you know, there really are. There's several, but they don't really mean much. They don't have a great effect, because people tend to gravitate towards one or the other. And this comes from a unique way that our country was devolved, which was to oppose elements in government rather than to have government as centralized in a single thing. We call it balance of power, but it was designed to weaken government, not to strengthen it. The concept of the founders of our country was that overall government was not the greatest thing in the world to allow to be, we'll say, on its own. And the government of our country was supposed to be a function of the will of the people. Now, the problem is that those folks were wise enough, and they had great wisdom, tremendous wisdom, to realize that no matter what you write in a constitution or in a Declaration of Independence or any other document, including the Federalist Papers and other things, it doesn't really matter because ultimately government tends to become its own thing and seeks power and control for its own purposes. I'm not kidding. If you read the Federalist Papers, you will read that. And these papers actually guided the first 30 to 40 years of our country's development. So it's very important to understand that government was not considered to be a good thing in general. It has good qualities when it is under the control of the people. And some of those qualities are to provide a secure environment for the people to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And by the way, in the Federalist Papers, happiness is kind of defined as a means of being able to commune with and create along the lines of one's creator. I swear that's what it says. I know some of you are going to say, oh, well, that's Angel's Wisdom. I read that in your book. Well, actually, it is in there, but that's not the point. This goes back before there was a U.S. This goes back before there was a, you know, there was even modern time civilizations. But that is the principle. So happiness isn't happiness like la, 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 I'm going to have fun. Happiness, as it was originally construed by the creators of this country, meant something much deeper. We're talking about really deep stuff, but mostly hidden from many people's thoughts today. I hope I'm telling you things that you didn't know, because that's a good thing, because then you can say, wow, I didn't know that. Okay, and of course you should check me out, make sure that what I'm telling you is correct, and I want that to be the case. But at any rate, if we start examining what government is supposed to be doing, it is supposed to, in general, move in the direction of the thought of the creator. That is, again, put into a number of different documents, including these papers I was talking about, but also it's part of the Declaration of Independence. And it's in part seen in various sections of the Constitution, but that's more of a working document than a philosophy. And so when we understand this, it's supposed to be in line with the thought of our Creator. That's what these people who were the great wise ones were attempting to do, you know. And it's an amazing thing because it allows us to then gain perspective on the political process, at least in the United States, and what could be hold promise for the political process of many other countries in the not-too-distant future. I realize there's many countries where there's terrible dictators, and political philosophy means almost nothing there because it's the will of one or a few people overcoming the benefit and creation of virtually everybody else. Oh, I wanted to mention, I don't know if our engineer is listening, but I should have told him this. We're only going to have one commercial tonight. We're going to try this format, and I'm going to do it about in the middle of the show. So he's going to have a great time probably saying, oh, no. But we have been running kind of a double commercial sort of thing where we put a couple books up that if you're interested you can get. So I'm going to go to that format because I just would like to have more time on the show. The only way I can squeeze in more time is to squeeze out commercials. So we're going to have one commercial in the middle of the show, give or take, I'm going to just kind of look at the clock and say, oh, this looks like a good time. That should really confuse them. And just say we're going to go to commercial and hope that we won't have too much dead air coming on. Okay, so I should have told him that, obviously, before we started. All right, so going back to what I was saying, the overall concept of our country was to create a government that followed pretty much the thought of its creator, and the creator is not the people per se. It's the people when they are functioning in line with their creator. That is the concept, and that is not so easy to understand unless you read some of the original documents that created our country, and then it starts making sense. Okay, now, why is this such a good political system, and why is this system probably a prototype for an even better system once we move more towards a soul level of functioning than the more personal one that we tend to be on at the present time? It's a great system because the thought of the creator is composed of two very, we'll say, complementary but different ways of being. The first is, all right, that there is to be freedom. Freedom of thought itself, freedom to create, freedom to have purpose, freedom for all kinds of wonderful things, to be creative, even to create against one's creator if so one so chooses. But freedom is a big issue. And this element of freedom is the part that gives people choices and the ability to have consistent choice, which we call will. And this is the very first part of the creator's mind. I call it that. Those of you who are reading or have read Life's Admitting know that that is in Chapter 2. It's also throughout the entire textbook, and it really explains it. Tonight we can't go into all the details about why this is the case, because that would be many shows just to explain that one concept. But it gives us some place to get a handle on what I'm going to explain, where two parties come from, etc. Okay, so the first part of God's thought, the creator's thought, is this freedom with all the other words attached to it, choices, will, purpose, you name it, creation, on and on. Okay, those are like, it's such a big concept, it isn't like one word, it's just huge. Okay, the second part of the creator's mind, which when joined with the first part, actually makes thought itself, is giving direction to the freedom, giving direction to the purpose, giving a means and way of understanding the purpose in one's freedom, a means and way of loving and giving to others and developing consciousness or understanding of what it means to give, what it means to have gratitude for, what it means to accept responsibility for others, recognizing that we are all inclusive and one. That is the second part of God's mind. It's so huge, again, no amount of words I use are going to fully explain it within this short duration of time. But when joined together, when choices that we make have a direction to them that affect additional choices in the future, we have thought. That's what thought is. Now, I know that's a biggie, you say, well, could he explain that again? I probably could explain it 100 times. You may not fully get it, because there's a lot of things to explain about what thought is and how where it comes from. But I'm trying to show you that thought has these two elements to it. And now you're going to hear the biggie. Okay, I love this part. Are you ready? The two parties that have existed. Now, there have been two parties, but they have been under different names. But the two parties that have existed since the beginning of our country, there have been two opposing parties. There's been more. And sometimes there's even been a third that has been close to challenging the other two in size, etc. But usually it dissolves and falls into one or the other categories, and you'll understand why in a minute. And that is the two parties choose by their own design to favor one or the other of the creator's own mind, and so they tend to over will, say, emphasize one part of thought over the other. Wow. Now you might say, well, why is that a good thing? Well, it's a good thing because it naturally occurs based upon a system which is created by, within the framework which is based upon our God. The system that is created by God naturally tends to develop this way because we do not have balance in our thought. We have excessive illusions that cause us to move in one direction or another, and so our thought is tilted towards one side or the other, and by nature, this causes these parties to be developed, which are mostly populated by people from one side or the other. Even people who are independent still have a tendency towards one side or the other, but they may be a little more balanced in some circumstances. Maybe not. They just can't make up their minds sometimes. But the point is that's how it works. Now, the interesting thing about this is that in today's world, as we call the parties today, because the Democrats at one time were part of the Republican Party. Yeah, if you go back to 200 years ago, the Democrats were called the Republican Democrats. And then there was another party called the Whigs, but they're not around anymore. So they kind of split up and became two parties after the Whigs kind of dissolved right before the Civil War. All right, so weird as it seems, this tendency is so strong that even an existing party that was one party became two when there was a vacuum and a second party did not exist. That's how strong this tendency is to do this. And the forefathers knew this was going to happen because they studied Ageless Wisdom and they understood everything I'm telling you and a lot more. This is amazing stuff that they knew this because it's a long time ago. They must have been really, really wise, tremendously, tremendously conscious people for their day. Because people have grown in consciousness since then, and we still can barely hold a candle to them. Even the more and most conscious people today would have trouble functioning in the realm of consciousness of the people who created our country. Yeah, amazing. I'm not saying they walked on water. I'm not saying they were perfect. I'm just telling you that these are really wise people, though. Okay. So, here we go. Which is which? Can you guess? Who is it that tends to want to give us the most freedom and the most, purpose and the most ability to make choices, etc.? Is it the Republicans or is it the Democrats? Well, I think most of you, if you think about it, will say it's the Republicans. Now, some Democrats think, well, but now, wait a second, there's this other side. Yeah, of course there is. That's the whole point. And the other side is, who is it that's trying to give and trying to help others to understand, to help others to become, we'll say, egalitarian, and for there to be inclusiveness and a kind of a oneness instead of a uniqueness to each of us? Well, it's the Democrats. So these two opposing parties represent this age-old element of an imbalance in the Creator's mind in all of us that, through our illusions, exists and now plays itself out in politics. Wow. I think that's neat. Now, maybe you don't, but I just think that's kind of neat. And by the way, I didn't say this, but if you want to call in and say something about this or anything else dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, you can. If you don't know the number by now, I'll tell it to you. 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. For those of you in Canada and who are under a slightly different system of government, but still I think there's enough similarities, you can call in at 888-815-9756. And we'll talk about all this stuff and a lot more. Yeah, I was so anxious to get into today's show, I didn't even mention that because this is an exciting show for me. Because there's a lot to say about this. By the way, I am absolutely positive we'll be talking about this subject next week as well. So do not be concerned if I don't get into everything because I can't do it tonight. 1 hour is not long enough to cover anywhere near the information that this is dealing with, much less trying to make some level of, we'll say, sense out of it and get all the concepts, the major concepts up. Okay. So let me go on. So we got two parties because it's the nature of us. Our system is really an expression of us because the government of our country comes from us and not from a dictator, not from an elite group of people, not from any other source than from us, which with us trying to replicate in ourselves and extending it out to our government, the mind of our creator. And this then gets expressed through there being two major parties. Wow. That is neat. Now, you know, there's this fellow named Smith who wrote stuff in the mid-18th century, like 1750, 1760, about free markets and about what would today be called like capitalism. And some of the elements of capitalism were also incorporated into ideas that constructed the United States. So instead of becoming a socialistic country by and large, or a communistic country, or some other istic ism, we tend to be capitalistic. Now, capitalism has to have some level of support and even regulation from government, because on its own, it can, unfortunately, become dark. And the reason it can become dark is that although free markets are a good thing in general, because they tend to function from the first part of the creator's mind, they sometimes, because the first part is so strongly represented, do not adequately protect us from things like called monopolies and a process in which the system itself cannibalizes and ends up governing people through, we'll call it, quasi-governmental things that have that are not truly government by our standards, but allow the sources of capitalism to interfere with government. And that's where the second part, the democratic part, instead of the republican part, comes in and adds a little bit of socialism and other flavors to the isms, to coming to buffer some parts of capitalism from getting too far off. So freedom of markets has to be somewhat buffered by some government regulation. The problem is that each side thinks that more of what it represents is better. So they kind of have disagreements among each other. Also, if we look at the more democratic side, you know, talking about politics now in the United States, that side tends to want to allow people to have more personal elements that will call it favor a less, at the present time in this country, less religious, less even spiritual element of the creator becoming part or represented by the government itself. Very interesting thing. And then the more Republican side, as it is represented today, tends to do the opposite. It tends to want to have the creator represented more in government, more represented in society in general, in civilization. Now, the interesting thing is that the creators of our government, the original wise ones, said two things, which are very interesting because they seem opposing. And that is that the government itself comes from the creator because it recognizes that the creator created the people who are creating the government, okay? But then it also says that the people can choose to not listen to their creator and can choose to not have the creator enforced upon them by any creed, any code of religion or whatever, through a thing called the Establishment Clause, which is the First Amendment in the Constitution. And beyond that, it's also mentioned in other ways in thought written by people before the First Amendment was in the Constitution. So interestingly, we have these two seemingly opposing things, but they're really not. Because what it really says is that generally the Creator can be part of our world as much as we choose it to be, but where it infringes upon our ability to choose it to not be collectively as a group, we can choose it to be put aside. So we don't all have to wear crosses, and we don't all have to have Stars of David or whatever around us, or we don't have to have various other factors. But we could, if we, as a majority, choose to have the mention of God on our coins or in a pledge to say that we're part of one country or certain other elements. It's kind of an interesting paradox because it says two different things, but they're supported in the ideas that come from the two sides of the Creator's thought. There has to be freedom, but there also has to be the ability to choose to not even seek one's Creator in some elements of life. Wow. These are big and very, very difficult to completely construct a society under. This is probably the reason that the United States, of all places, has had the most difficult time in actually trying to create a true free society. Because a true free society is a society that has these kind of paradoxes in it. Okay, so we're going to be coming back in about 2 minutes. And when we do, I will tell you a lot more about this fascinating subject, which I just can't even, there's so much to talk about. And if you want to talk to me, you can call in while we're on break or soon after, and then we'll come back. So I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about the metaphysical and spiritual principles coming from Ageless Wisdom, which is kind of my focus, or we'll say my general leanings towards in the subject area. and how they apply to political systems, and especially about the United States. But if you have something to add or talk about from another country, and you can get on, that's fine. You can call me, or you can email me, and I'll talk about it next week, because we'll be continuing this subject, by the way. And, of course, I would love to talk to anybody who wants to talk about anything dealing with or around this subject. Okay, so let me move ahead now. So we know that we have two parties that really are an expression of the mind of our own creator as it is imbalanced within our thought. And the reason we have so much struggle today, and I want to bring this in, because we do have a lot of struggle. Now, struggle has always been there between political parties. Don't think that, oh, gee, it's just so terrible today, because we've had problems throughout all of the time this country has been around. But the reason we have whatever we have today especially is because there is an enhancement in the amount of egotism as human beings have developed throughout from one generation to the next. We tend to develop more and more of our mental selves. But the mental self, it comes from developing a body called the mental body. And unfortunately, as a body is developing, it tends to get out of kilter, and it from one lifetime to the next, from a soul's incarnation. And the result can be that we tend not to want to hear the thought of other people and believe that our thought is right and other people's thought is wrong. We lack a thing called humility. And this gets expressed in our political system through these two parts of our illusion mind in this country, one of them being more towards the side of the first part of God's mind and expression, and the other from the second. And the two sides don't actually see that they're kind of like parts of each other. They're all part of thought. You're part of their creator, but they don't get that that's the case. And so they have arguments and fight about pieces of concepts that are unwhole. Let me give you an example of one of these unwhole concepts so you can see what I'm talking about. Now, this may upset everybody, because I tend, when I get into these kind of expressions and talking, I tend to, you know, tick everybody off, literally, because I'm going to bring out the illusions on both sides of the listeners. But that's intended, so please bear with me. And if you don't like me, I guess you can tune me out, you know. That's one of the things you could do. But let's talk about the question of, some people call it the right to life, and then other people call it the right to a woman's right to have an abortion or expression of her body or whatever all of the things are. I mean, these are critical elements of the unfortunate dichotomy in our thought. Now, is it true that, you know, a cell in a petri dish is a human being, and if you planted it in a woman, it eventually or could become a human being, and therefore we have to protect it because it's really life and everything else? Well, let me tell you what I know, what I think I know, but I could be wrong about this. But I'm not. I don't think I'm wrong, but I could be. So I'm being as humble as I can, and that is, souls, when they incarnate, in order to develop into a human being, it takes several months, at least 3+ months, before there's any sign of what could be construed to be the basis of what makes us human. Why is that? There has to be a minimum of 3 bodies. Each body has to have a minimum of 7 centers or chakras in it to make us a human being. If there are less bodies or less chakras in each of the bodies, we are then not human. We would be considered like animal life, but not human. And therefore, until there's a human being present, you can't really say you're killing humans. So here's the concept I'm going to propose. If everybody understood what I said and believed it, which they may not, but I'm obviously, then there wouldn't be an argument about when there is a human being present that we might kill or something like that through an abortion. But it still would have some effect, obviously, about abortions in general. And so both sides might have a very interesting dialogue about that. We do have a caller online, so I would like to take that call. Hello, caller. Are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm absolutely wonderful. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing great. And what is your first name?
My first name is Annie.
Hi, Annie.
Hi.
Nice to talk. I don't know if you've called before, but nice to talk with you.
Well, thank you, and nice to speak to you as well. I was directed to you about a week ago for a particular question that I have, and it's in lieu somewhat with what you're discussing tonight, as well as venturing off in a little bit of a different direction.
That's fine.
Do you mind?
Go ahead.
Okay, great. My question is, originally, if group consciousness developed experience outside of itself, and I'm not really saying outside of itself, but to experience, therefore enabling itself to procreate new universes for new experience. My question would be, originally, what would be the reason to do this? If we come from a state of being of pure consciousness and perfection in itself, why would it be necessary to have to experience anything outside of that?
What a wonderful question. Well, let me tell you what that is. This is my understanding of it, and of course, I would love to hear if you think differently or if you have any questions about it. Mm-hmm. And that is that the creator of our universe, now when I say universe, I'm talking more than the physical universe many people are familiar with. I'm talking about a universe with seven very huge, large dimensions of time and space to them, and they're very complicated and different than anything most people are used to. At any rate, this creator decided that it wanted to grow. But at the beginning of this whole process, it is a self-created being, as we are, by the way, and it said to itself, you know, if I'm to grow, there's a little catch here, and here's the catch. If I'm to grow, I can't be all there is, and I have to create something that has the ability to be both free and self-expressive, and at the same time, at least in the beginning of the process, less than what I am at the present moment, but allows a change or an improvement over time to who and what I exist as. So The creator is not perfect. The creator is not perfect. Our soul is not perfect. As a matter of fact, there's no such thing as perfect, because every being, be it the creator of universes or the creator of greater universes than this one, because there are those, is still growing, because that is what is so wonderful about what we call existence, is that it never ceases to develop, to continue to develop. And so this great being chose to create life. Life is the expression of itself in many different facets, in great diversity, beyond our comprehension of diversity, and doing so with great freedom and the ability to eventually find elements of its creator and to grow those elements within itself, which it then contributes to the development of its own creator. Because it's all part of, it can never be separate from, it's all part of the creator. What a wonderful system this creator came up with to grow itself indefinitely is to create life that has the ability to do the same and to become eventually a creator of an entire universe at some time in the future. All of us will have that opportunity, but it's sometime a long time from now based upon as we understand time.
Mm-hmm.
And that explains the rationale for what my understanding is about, which is that there is no perfection. Even our soul, which has great consciousness, greater than the human being that we are in illusion within a small part of dimensionality, and due to problems with our own senses having to be developed much further. But as we are developing this part of the universe, we are still contributing to both our soul's development and to God's development by creating more of what I call virtue or light in form, the form of the dimension that we live in. So that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I actually, it resonates.
Good.
I can tell you that.
Great.
Along with that, perhaps I would need to ask at this point, if you've still got a minute, do I have time?
I got a minute. I've got more than a minute. Go ahead.
Wonderful. When you mention, quote-unquote, creator, and you're using semantics as God and whatever, you know, fits and is necessary, are you using this in reference to a group consciousness, or am I off base?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about group consciousness is that all beings at the soul or higher level exist within group consciousness. Now, what does that mean? That means God is group conscious. That means that everything below God or the Creator, you can use any word you want. I like using lots of words to describe Creator so that it doesn't get fixed as a religious connotation.
Right.
Am I talking about a specific figure or something like that? I'm talking about a concept more than that. Okay, but to my understanding, everything that is at the level of a soul or higher has group consciousness, which means by defining group consciousness, that it identifies itself as being part of something greater and bigger, although it still has individualness and can identify itself as being an individual. It sees itself as also being part of all life and part of its creator and part of maybe other things besides, which depending upon its level of understanding, it may understand much more than we do. Mm-hmm. But the point is, that's what I would call group consciousness. Now, what would you call group consciousness?
Well, I pretty much kind of on the same thing. I would view it as a, I guess, symbolic place, an energy, if you will, where ideas, thought, conceptual thoughts, and whatnot happen. And again, being that the experience is individualized, yet not individualized, kind of on the parallel, if you will.
Yeah.
Pretty much, I think the same lines that you do. I just wanted some clarification and perhaps some input about original creation and expanding from original creation and place of being. And I've been tossing this back and forth for quite a while now, and perhaps you helped me clear that up a little bit, and I do thank you for that.
Well, you're very welcome. And it is Ann, is that correct?
Yes, Annie. Mm-hmm.
Annie. Well, listen, Annie, you're welcome to call in again. If you want, you can get my number off the website. You can call me direct. I am available. You can also email me. We can carry this on further. It sounds like you've done some studying and thinking about this. And whatever you would like to do, and just keep listening as well. I hope you will.
Well, I thank you very much, and I probably will do that. And I'm going to enjoy the rest of your show. You have a wonderful evening.
Same to you.
Thank you, Niall.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, so let's continue on talking. I hope you all were following what we were talking about there, because sometimes we can get off on things, but that's great. So let me try to tie this together. When Annie was saying how it affects then a government, how it affects policies that we tend to create around ourselves. We create these paradoxes, we create these complications, these issues that are really issues about our misunderstanding principles of spirituality and metaphysics sometimes. Now, I was trying to explain, one of those complications is, what about life? When is something a human and when is something not a human? Well, you see, what we're really discussing about when we have arguments about this in most quarters, especially even the Supreme Court in our own country, is that we don't have an understanding of what a human being is. And if you don't understand what a human being is, how can you declare when it's wrong to kill one or right to kill one or whatever? You see how this gets complicated. Now, my suggestion, for those of you who would like to do so, you can get the book I wrote that's a textbook called Life's Hidden Meaning, and in there I explain how and exactly by the day and the time, et cetera, a human being is created. But in general, if we were to allow quote-unquote abortions in a legal sense up until at least the first trimester, we would not be killing a human being. Now, some of you go, oh, the sanctity of human life. Well, it's not, you know, it's life. Yes, all things are life that we kill, but some things we eat, unfortunately, some of us eat, you know, lots of things that are relatively higher life. and don't get all squirrely about that. The fact of the matter is that if we're really concerned about human life, we're dealing with it in terms of metaphysics and spirituality, based upon my understanding, which you couldn't obviously disagree with, then we have to look at it from that definition first before we get into a discussion that makes sense about what we should do about it. And that would change the complexion of people's understandings. The reason we are locked into such battles about this is because each side is egotistical in their ignorance of not understanding the definition of human life. And since they don't understand it, and they make up whatever they want to make up, one side says that a life isn't human until it's born, and the other says a life is human as soon as a zygote is created because a sperm has come in contact with a human egg. And therefore, you now have human life. Because eventually the human egg will become a human being. Well, eventually many things will happen, but that doesn't change what is happening at the moment that somebody does something. So taking a future event and predicating our present behaviors upon it is not a logical sequence. It's like going backwards instead of forwards in one's thought. So you can't use that as a good argument. I know that some people do. And unfortunately, I don't agree with them, but that's okay. That's we don't have to always agree on things, but nonetheless, that's where I'm coming from. So is there a point where there is a human life? Yes. And should we probably, from that point, not want to stop that human life because it's an incarnation of a human soul? Yes, I agree with that position. But should we therefore stop everybody from doing any abortions under any circumstances because we call human life something that's arbitrary and not true? No, because you have to have the two sides represented here. You have to have the question of freedom, and you need also the side of protection for those who may lose their freedom but can't protect themselves at the present time. Very interesting stuff. So we can see between just that one example, now there's hundreds, there's thousands of examples of these two parties presently locked in battles with each other about principles that they don't completely understand, and because of their own egotism, they can't seem to get out of. Next week, I'm going to talk about a fellow named Newt Gingrich, who wrote a book called Real Change, and some of his ideas in that book, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff that's more specific about political systems. I'm going to use some of his examples to kind of, we'll say, parallel and at other times contradict, to give some kind of understanding. I really have enjoyed reading his book, even though I don't agree with everything, but I find a lot of this stuff is quite interesting and very helpful. Now, I also want to mention that this Sunday, for those of you who have the time, you can tune in between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1170 a.m. if you're anywhere in the northeastern part of the United States, and listen to me talking about understanding space. What is space? Yes, I like it. And, of course, if you're not in Eastern Standard Time, you can figure that out for yourself where you really, you know, are. And If you're not in the eastern part of the United States, you can go to WDISAM.com and, just like you're doing right now, tune me in on the Internet. So I'm on both, simulcast on both at that time. Also, anybody who wants to understand more about life after death, you can hear Mimi talking about it over at Glendale Borders on March 3rd from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m., and hopefully, if you're in the Phoenix area, that's Glendale, Arizona, by the way, if you're in the Phoenix area, please stop in. I can't guarantee I will be there. I did show up a few weeks ago for one of her talks, and I actually got to talk to a lot of people there. I can't go to all of these events because I have so many other things I'm doing, unfortunately. But nonetheless, she will be there talking about that. And she's a member of the spiritual group of which I am a member, if you want to know who she is. So I want to just reiterate, for next week, we're going to continue this subject. I find it absolutely fascinating. I hope you have found it equally so. And until next week, I want you to consider this, that all the political stuff that's going on around us, especially if you're listening to debates or if you're going to be voting or whatever, Think about it in context of what I told you in today's show. It may help you to make decisions about who to vote for, et cetera, because next week I'm going to talk about the consciousness of the candidates that are running. How do you like that? Boy, I'm really putting myself on the line. Well, listen, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.